Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May, and joining me again today is Neil Golden. Neil, how you doing?
Fine, Rob. It's good to be talking to you again.
It's always good to have you on. Welcome back. And for all those just tuning in to today's show, this is part four of a five-part series that we're doing with Neil. And Neil, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And specifically, I mean, I know that, you know, it's what we've been calling you is a stock chart reader. So why don't you briefly give us a little bit of insight into what it is that you do?
Okay, I've been doing this for some years now. Mainly it started out as a hobby, and then as I approached retirement age, I sort of got more serious about it, so I went out and I found myself a mentor to teach me the nuts and bolts, and after a while I felt that I became pretty good at it, and so here I am today talking to you.
And how long have you been doing the stock chart reading now?
I started mainly in the mid-80s.
Okay.
You know, like I said, it's just a hobby. And before I go any further, I'd like to give a disclaimer.
Absolutely.
You know that stock trading, it's an art. It is not a science. Just because something has happened in the past doesn't mean that it will happen again in the future under the same conditions, and never trade or invest with money you can't afford to lose.
I'm sure many people should probably heed that advice.
Yeah, it's very important part of money management. If you are to survive, you have to be cautious when you buy risk.
Absolutely. I mean, and with, you know, before we get into today's main topics, I do want to say too, you know, that obviously investing in the stock market, it, like anything else, it can certainly become addicting, I would assume, right?
Yes, it is, especially if you're doing it on a daily basis. It is very addicting because you're ignoring the basic principles and there really isn't a trade there. And you're just, it can be just as addictive as gambling, especially after you have a big win, you sort of feel invincible.
Right.
And you can turn around and lose the money a lot quicker than you made it.
Absolutely. And for, you know, for the new audience that's joining us, what are you looking for when you're reading the different stock charts?
Mainly I'm looking for what I call a setup. That means a condition that exists over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me some indication or a chart pattern that makes itself present, that I recognize, that I know my odds of winning are much greater than my odds of losing.
Right.
And that's what I'm looking for when I review the charts that I look at, you know, on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any go-to stocks that you would recommend to people or go-to industries to invest in?
No, but from looking at the news, you know, at this point, you know, they say biotech is taking off, you know, pharmaceuticals are doing good, those two areas, and lately they've been saying energy is making a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can go with recommendations of what you hear, you know, in the news media if you want to, and just check them out. One of the greatest ones that I've heard this week would be concerning Netflix, in the sense that they're saying it could split, for every one share, it could split into 30 shares. And I'm saying, wow, that's astronomical.
Right. Now, when people hear this, though, I mean, should they jump? What would you do in that situation?
Well, I would look over the past performance. I think Netflix has been around for about 10 years. I don't know when it came out, but it has all to do with streaming films. You know, they could
right.
be the majority. Company that's out there. I hear all the cable companies eventually will go out of business, and even maybe the satellite companies will too. So we'll have, you know, just the Netflix format left in the end if they prove to be the dominant one. I don't know if people are familiar. It may be too young to realize, but or to remember, but before we had DVDs, those came out the same time that I think it was no, it was VHS and 8-track system of recording. And as you know, we no longer use 8-track because VHS won. So the same thing is happening in motion picture industry and streamlining, and also in the music industry.
Absolutely. I mean, now CDs are becoming null and void.
Yeah, they will disappear completely sometime in the future. So you just have to prepare for that. You know, a lot of people have taken their VHS and downloaded them or transformed them to DVDs, but now DVDs are more or less on their way out too. So who knows what will replace them.
And obviously technology, and I should say advances in technology, can definitely play tricks in the stock, in the investment field. So, you know, is there anything that people should kind of, what resources really should people study or go to when wanting to get involved in stock chart reading or just investing on a whole?
Well, now, you know, things are happening so fast and rapidly. I can't really point that out, but I remember once when I was in college, I had this one teacher that was an avid fan of science fiction. That's all he spent his time doing. And during class, he'd get up and start talking about science fiction, and I didn't understand where he was coming from. So I dropped his class. But in a sense, I do remember, you know, when I was in high school reading a book called 1984, and it was discussing things as Double Talk and what was the other one? Big Brother, you know, looking over your shoulder. And,
sure.
And when I think about it now, you know, those things have really come to be real in the sense that, you know, anywhere you go, you know, there's always cameras on you at any time. So you just have to get used to it. You know, your sense of privacy has been lost. So if you have a futuristic outlook, you know, things are going to change. That's all I can say. Very rapidly.
Absolutely. And it, I mean, it's definitely important to stay up on the trends then, to really stay informed as an investor.
Yeah, in some ways that's very impossible, you know, in a way you just can't predict what the future holds, but things are happening very rapidly now. I mean, you know, there's Apple out there, you know, first they were into computers, but now they're into phones, and now they're trying to get into music, and they're into watches, and, you know, it's like Dick Tracy of the future. I mean, very inventive, you know, company, so what more can I say? You know, I can't keep up with all the technology and
of course,
myself as an individual. I have to talk to younger people to do it.
That's very true. Now, getting to some of the topics that we were planning on discussing today, what would you discuss about the S&P 500 and the main sectors of it?
Well, I thought at first this would be a very easy field to cover, in a sense that there are only 10 sectors, you know, covering the S&P 500.
Sure.
And in case the listeners don't know, S&P stands for Standard & Poor's. What it is basically it's a rating company that rates corporations and bonds and all kinds of other securities that are bought and sold on stock exchanges. It gives them a credit rating, like if the stock is AAA or just A or a B rating or whatever. So basically that's what they've done, but what they've done is they've taken 500 largest companies that are traded, and they put them all together into an index.
Okay.
And these indexes can be traded as exchange-traded funds, which means when you buy an ETF, you're buying a basket of companies. You're not just buying one, but they're all thrown in there for sometimes a lesser price than the whole aggregate would cost together. So mainly you can buy S&P 500 shares mainly through a mutual fund or according to certain sectors in the market. There's other groups. I think Vanguard has one, a group of ETFs. The CBOE has their group, and some of the big brokerage houses sell their own form of these investments. But the reason for this conversation in the first place, the more I got into it, the more confusing it became and the more difficult. And I said, hey, I better back off from this a little bit because currently, like the S&P 500, it's selling for like it's at like 2,100.
Okay.
That was probably pretty close to what it closed to today, which is June the 11th, 2015, and for the last couple of days. Last 2 days, it has been going up. I think yesterday, which was June the 10th, it advanced 200 and about 36 points. That was a big jump for a one-day move in the S&P. But I sort of agree with the explanation that I heard on TV. They said the reason why it went up is because nobody was selling and everybody was a buyer. And if, but the volume on this for the day wasn't really all that high. So in that respect, it's not a very reliable move.
Okay.
Which sort of means that sooner or later it will continue to go down. So be very, very wary. If you were to ask me, is this a good time to be buying stocks?
Mm-hmm.
I would say no. It would probably be a better time to be saving your money because the time to get excited is when the market begins to go down, because usually when the market goes down 10% or so, that creates a good buying opportunity. And in the past, the market has always bounced back. So just be wary. Right now, I feel 2015, just hold your money a little bit longer, and you'll get a lower price which to buy into the market. The only interesting thing about that, I think since 2008, they're saying that for the most part, the individual investors have not returned to the market.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they check this is they check the savings accounts of Americans. At this point, they're saying Americans are sitting on about $11 billion
dollars
in their bank accounts. In Japan, the individuals in Japan are sitting on about $18 billion. So it's not in the market at this time. So that just leaves professional traders and the big institutions out there trading against themselves.
And in terms of technical analysis, now, I've done some research, in my just basic research about what it is that you do. I've seen this term technical analysis. I don't really know what it is. So, please, why don't you let us know a little bit about this and if it works or not?
Oh, okay. Very good question. I'm confronted with this question all the time because people will tell me that technical analysis doesn't work. You know, it's all a matter of what you believe. Is the glass half full or glass is half empty? And what I have found out, that if you understand the basics of technical analysis, what everybody is looking for and has never been found is something they call the Holy Grail, something that works under all conditions all of the time. Well,
right.
Like most things in life, there's no such conditions and there's no such thing or format or whatever to trading that works 100% of the time. So what I have found that most people that are in technical analysis, they have what they call an edge, something that they use that they feel that gives them advantage over everyone else and what everyone else is doing. And they use this edge to their advantage to make their money. So technical analysis combined with whatever edge it is you can do, it could be some kind of indicator, it could be, you know, the jobs report, or it could be an oscillator or an oscillator, or, you know, advanced decline line, or onboard volume, or anything like that. And if you use it correctly, you will make money at it. That's what my feelings are towards it. I think I've mentioned in previous broadcasts that what started for me to make sense is when I found out the contributions of Charles Dow, W.D. Gann, I guess Richard Elliott, and also Richard Wyckoff. When I found out what their contributions to technical analysis were, then it began to make sense. Basically, technical analysis, it consists of looking at price and time on a chart.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're looking, your timing is more important than the price, and volume is more important than the price. And whether or not the price is high or low really doesn't matter, because you can't figure that out in your head at all, but you just factor in these two before you make a decision to buy. Price is more or less irrelevant in your decision to buy a stock or not. It's just the way the price has moved in the past will determine somewhat how it will move in the future. Basically, that's all technical analysis is.
And does technical analysis work for, you know, both long-term or short-term stocks? I mean, you know, does it work for everything pretty much?
Yeah, it works for everything. Matter of fact, one of the slowest moving things out there are stocks. Guy just called me the other day, and he promised I'd be making $29,000 a month if I just gave him like $3,500 in the sense that he wanted me to trade futures, but I said, no, I don't want to trade options on futures or, you know, currencies or commodities or anything of that sort. So I had to turn him down. But basically it's the same thing for trading all instruments of or in all kinds of securities. It works on all of them in all different time frames.
And can you specify what you mean?
Getting back to this statement, you know, technical analysis doesn't work.
Yes.
Currently, I'd just like to go over what I find out or look at and see what's happening in the market. And the first one, as you know, Charles Dow, he was originally a New York financial newspaper writer, and
mm-hmm.
later he founded Wall Street Journal. But Dow theory, it's made up of three components. It's made up of Dow Jones Industrials, which have 30 stocks in them, and then it has the Dow Jones Transportation that has 20 stocks, and then the Dow Jones Utilities, which has 15 stocks in it. And the industrials, those are made up of basically 30 of the highest cap stocks, or the most 30 most expensive companies out there, you know, building in the past, I'd say, industrial things. And these things, once they're built, they have to be sold. So in the past, what happened, that these things would have to be transported on either railroads or airplanes or boats to the market in which they'd be sold. And according to Dow theory, anytime you have two of these indexes, the industrials, transportation, or utilities, pointing in the same direction, well, the conclusion is that's the way the market will go. Right now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is sort of sloping down. New York Stock Exchange is sloping down. And then also the Dow Jones Transportation Index is sloping down. So according to the Dow Jones theory, the market definitely will have a sell-off. Right now, I guess the market for the Dow Jones is close to about 18,000. Well, this 18,000 means that to buy one share of these 30 stocks that comprise the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it would take like $18,000. But if you had, and your broker was charging you like $10 a trade, well, that would cost you approximately, you know, $300 in commissions. So instead of you going out and individually buying one share of these 30 companies in the Dow Industrials, what you can do is go and buy something called a diamond or a SPY, which is basically ETF, or exchange traded fund, that represents a basket of these components, and just pay one commission price instead of having to buy each stock individually and pay $30, you know, $300, you know, right, approximately, for one share of all of these stocks. One of the reasons why I sort of backed off of the S&P 500 10 sectors was because, like I was just saying, right now the Dow Jones is around 1,800. I expect in the next couple of weeks it'll probably be going lower. Mm-hmm. But the S&P 500, which is composed of 500 stocks, it's only around $2,100 when you combine all of these. And the thing I can't seem to figure out, and I have no explanation for, is why the 30 stocks in the Dow cost $18,000 and the 500 stocks in the S&P 500, you know, would only cost you about $2,100. So the difference between the two is about nine times. If you were to multiply the S&P 500 price by nine times, you would get about $18,000. And why there is this difference is in how much each, you know, stock is weighted in both of these indexes. I do not know how that is done. So it's sort of baffling on that aspect. But I am aware of the fact that, you know, if the Dow or the S&P 500 were to, say, have a 6% return during the year, well, you would consider yourself to have a good year if your return was 8 to 10% a year.
So 8 to 10% is considered good.
Yeah, anytime you beat the growth of the S&P 500, you're having a good year. Yeah. that's significant. So, you know, so much for the Dow theory. But then Also, this thing by Richard Elliot, he's more or less the inventor of the Elliot Wave, and today that was in, there is one person, Richard Pritchard, who, no, it's Robert Pritchard, I'm sorry, Robert, for messing up your first name, but he runs an organization called Elliot Wave International. And according to Mr. Pritchard, at least with Apple company, Apple seems to be in what they call the sixth wave of an Elliott wave, which has eight waves. And in the sixth wave, it indicates that, you know, Apple is on the verge of taking a rest and having a pullback at this time. And there are other stocks that are in the same wave or condition. So when I put the two together, the Dow theory and Elliott wave, they're both in down positions, and I'm saying that the market will have a sharp sell-off sometime soon in the future.
Right.
So, you had a question?
I was going to ask, in terms of, you know, when people work with financial planners, now, are these all terms that financial planners would throw at people that, you know, might not necessarily know exactly all the terminologies and the basic understanding of the market?
Yeah, very true. I don't see financial planners knowing the difference between Elliott Wave, you know, a GAN trade and a Wyckoff trade, or the difference, or thoroughly understanding Dow theory, or an Elliott Wave for that matter. That's
right.
Way technical and over their heads. So financial planners, I feel, you know, they're out there making recommendations and trying to help you make, you know, reach your goals. But when it comes down to the nits, you know, nuts and bolts of actual trading, I don't think they're really familiar with it, you know, the risk that you're going. And if you look at television, when they have people giving their opinions, most of them are very optimistic or very whatever can you say, you know, they think that the market was always going up and they're encouraging people to buy, which isn't always the best thing to do, to follow their advice. And they're telling you that timing the market is crazy and you really can't do it, and technical analysis just by itself doesn't work. But on the other hand, to be a someone who uses technical analysis, I don't think I've emphasized this point clearly enough. When a professional trader is in the market on any one given trade, he's only using, you know, maybe 1 to 10% of his total cash. When he's not in the market, everything is in cash. You know, he's not into bonds. He's not into securities. He's just completely out of the market when he's not trading professionally to make money. And the reason why this is important is in previous conversations, I have mentioned that you should always have extra cash on hand in case something does open up and you see an opportunity that you can take advantage of it. So,
absolutely. Well, Neil, as unfortunate as it is, we are running out of time for this episode, but I am glad to say that we do have you coming back in 2 weeks for part five of this discussion. And like I said, in a quick word, would you use a financial advisor for your own investment plans?
Would I use one?
Right.
No.
Okay. And with that, I am going to have to say goodbye to you for today, Neil. But I do want to thank you again for coming on. And from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. And, Neil, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, good talking to you, Rob. Take care.
You too. Take care.